You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So, that's a very interesting question because, first of all, let's take it from the standpoint of how do you counsel someone like that. Let's take it from that particular angle. Sometimes we as devotees are so much wrapped up in the philosophy that we go all the way to the head and we forget about the heart. It's interesting, I was talking the other day, I said, devotees, they have their consciousness in two places, and head and the stomach, and the heart no longer has a soul. So, anyways, you understand what I mean? Like stomach, eating, and then when they're not eating, they get so philosophical that they actually apparently cruel to people. For example, you know, you go into a hospital and someone is writhing in pain, and then you tell the person, you're not your body. It's interesting. And which may be true, it is true, you're not the body, but it's probably the most uncompassionate thing that you can say to someone when they're in pain. So let's say someone has been, like you say, raped. Okay. So, you know, we can tell someone it's their karma. And that is probably one of the cruelest things you can tell someone. The reason is, there's several reasons, is that one will actually blame themselves for that activity, which is actually the worst possible thing in rape, if you talk to professional counselors. Because the person, many times they feel guilty, especially in the Indian culture, there's already guilt about it. I mean, you find sometimes in India that people actually, if something happens to one's daughter, that the parents will commit suicide like that, and the daughter will commit suicide because there's a lot of stigma if anything like that happens. You know what stigma means? Anyone know what stigma means? Stigma means like a bad reputation. And people in India are very much concerned with reputation. I mean, it's just like, in the West here, you know, not too many Aussies in the room. There's some ABCDs here. Australian-born confused Deshis. You understand what that is? That means that someone from India or from Fiji who was born in Australia can't figure out who they are. That's what it means. But the Indian culture, there's somehow a lot of stress on reputation. In fact, Krishna himself makes the point to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So, but for Aussies and Americans and Kiwis, they don't give a damn what people think about them, usually. You know, just like, who cares, you know? Who cares? But I'm talking about Indian culture, so it's a big shame thing. You know, a big shame thing if something happens to someone. And obviously, you don't want to talk about it. So, you can increase their, mental trauma by saying it's your karma. So you definitely don't want to say that to someone. I mean, it's probably the worst possible thing you could say to someone. The best way to counsel someone in that situation is to try to empathize with them. Empathize means that basically they're feeling horrible, completely horrible, violated. You know, there's other words that we can use for that. Because, you know, they have a need for protection and they're not being protected. And then they're looking at Krishna, like you said, and they're saying, Krishna, why didn't you protect me in such a circumstance? So what I would do is I would empathize with them and say, then, you know, you really are in a, you're in a lot of pain. And then I would reflect, you know, what they were feeling and reflect their particular needs. And so I wouldn't go into the karma thing or the philosophy at all with that particular individual. We do understand that according to the law of karma, when something happens to us, it's due to a number of factors. One is, according to the law of karma, it's due to something we did in the past. But there's more than that, even for someone who's not a devotee. We may have made a mistake. I mean, actually, let's say if you're driving your car and you're drinking beer, not that you would do such a thing, and you get in an accident, or using your mobile phone, you get in an accident, you can't always blame the law of karma. It's that you were foolish enough to, you know, drive your car under the influence of alcohol or drive your car while you're talking on the mobile phone. So there's also, in addition to karma or Krishna's will, there's also your own foolishness that comes into play when things happen. So, but really you don't want to bring that out if someone has been attacked or raped. You simply want to empathize with them. And then long term, so that's, you know, short term. That's short term, how to deal with it. Long term, the person has to process it themselves and come to the conclusion of why that happened to them and also take measures that it doesn't happen again. And learn certain lessons in this world. I mean, let's forget about karma or taking the blame for it. We can learn the lesson that this material world is just like a nasty place. There's millions of lessons to be learned. Another lesson is that learn to take more precaution when we're actually going out. And another lesson may be to have compassion. I mean, this is the hardest lesson to learn, even for the person who attacked you. But that's actually one of the hardest lessons, which is a Vaishnava lesson. That, like Haridas Thakur, because he wasn't being raped, but he was being attacked in 22 marketplaces. And sannyasis have to hear cell phones while they're preaching. So, so he was being attacked in 22 marketplaces, and ultimately his response was one of compassion. But that takes a long time. So I've seen it in my own life. Of course, I've never been raped, obviously. But in my own life, when I've been attacked unfairly for, you know, various reasons, because you do have the internet, which is filled with attacks. The more prominent you become in Krishna consciousness, the more you get attacked. In fact, sometimes you even get attacked by your best friends, which is even harder than being attacked by... That's not a mobile phone, at least. It's a landline. So, this is one of the miseries of material life. Adi Admik, Adi Bodhik, Adi Daivik, Adi Phonik. So, I mean, just giving my own experience, of course, I'm not comparing it to the situation of a lady being raped, which is actually extreme violation. But when people attack you, or attack me, on the internet, which is probably the worst attack that I've had so far, then the initial response is to get angry with them and want to attack back. Of course, that doesn't work on the internet because it just gets worse. But what I try to do is somehow or other develop some sort of empathy for the person attacked and actually be praying for their welfare. I mean, that's ultimately the highest thing you can do, is pray for the welfare of the person who has taken you and attacked you for no reason whatsoever, and you didn't do anything wrong. I mean, it's important always to remember you didn't do anything wrong to deserve this. But to actually pray for their spiritual welfare or pray for their forgiveness, like Jesus Christ when he was being pinned on the cross. I mean, that's almost like a rape, you know, when someone's pinning nails through your hands and then through your feet. I mean, that's pretty bad. I don't think any of you would experience that, have you? No. But, you know, he said, "Forgive them, Lord, and they know not what they do." So I would take anything that happens to us. And I said, I'm not going to start preaching, saying this to a rape victim. They have to actually come up with this themselves. I would take anything that happened to us as an opportunity to sort of develop a deeper compassion for even the person who did it. If you can develop compassion for someone who considers you to be their enemy or someone who has attacked you, then you're coming to a very high stage of Krishna consciousness. How does that sound? It's difficult. It's very difficult because normally we want to get even with someone and we become very happy to see them suffer. Like, you know, obviously if someone attacks you and you can put them in jail and you can see them suffer in jail, it gives you some satisfaction in life. But that's not Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism is not to forgive them and see them wander the streets or anything like that, but Vaishnavism is to somehow or other pray for their welfare and also put them in jail. You understand? But not hate them. Because a Vaishnava is a jata shatrava. A jata shatrava means someone whose enemy is never born. So really we have to come to that stage somehow or other. So I think that's really the lesson to learn when anything like that happens to you. Of course, immediately, yes, compassion, you have to deal with your own issues, and there's some therapy necessary. But ultimately, in the long run, compassion has to be there for even the person who did something to you. But that's a very high stage. I'm not saying you have to do it, but I'm just explaining the different stages or different ways to deal with such a situation. But going back to the first point I made, certainly you don't want to preach to someone who has undergone that trauma. You want to just be completely empathic with them, understanding their feelings and their needs for protection. So, is that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it help if we are grateful to the things whatever has happened to with us? If we feel grateful because
yeah.
In some sense, there is always some positive things.
Yeah, well, that's what I always say, that there's no problems in this world, there are only challenges. But initially, you can't really approach someone like that. I mean, imagine like approaching someone who's been attacked or raped and saying, you should feel grateful, this is a nice challenge in your life. I mean, I probably got shot in the head a few times when I started counseling people like that. I mean, ultimately, yes, it's the challenge. What is the challenge? To become compassionate. The challenge when we're being attacked is to become passionate with the people. I mean, for example, in the Ramayana, you have Indrajit who was killed by Lakshman, and all the monkeys wanted to tear his body apart. You know, out of vengefulness, because Indrajit had killed so many of the monkeys and killed so many soldiers, you know, the bears and the monkeys and everything like that. So, but Lord Ram said, no, now that he is dead, the enmity is over. And then Lord Ram covered Indrajit with his own cloth and sent him back for a proper funeral to Ravan. Of course, it was also part of the strategy to make Ravan angrier. I mean, I understand that too. I mean, there was a mixed motive with that. But still, he honored Indrajit. He honored Indrajit. So, obviously, we want to see people rectified. In other words, there's two, getting to justice, or let's talk about justice. There's two types of justice, theories of justice. One is called retributive justice, and the other one is called restorative justice. And if you go to the university and study justice, you'll understand what I'm talking about, but I'll explain what it is. Retributive means that you really just punish someone because they did something wrong for the sake of punishment. It's like when in America, someone has this capital punishment. If someone's committed a murder, then you'll find all sorts of people gather outside of the prison before they kill the person, you know, capital punishment. And they do something called tailgating. I don't know if you know what tailgating is. Tailgating is when you take your pickup truck and everyone sits on the tailgate of the pickup truck and they get drunk outside of the prison. Or outside, anyway, they do it in racing games. I'm sure that Shavasaki knows what I'm talking about. Not that she ever did it. She went to New Vrindavan. I'm sure they went to different places to collect money where people were tailgating, right? You never saw that? I'm sure you saw it. It's America. It's famous. So, and then they cheer when someone gets killed. You know, the electric chair or injection, lethal injection or something like that. But that's called retributive justice. You know, you just make someone suffer for what they did. And so people have a misunderstanding about the Yamadutas. They think the Yamadutas are there to make people suffer for their sins. No. The Yamadutas are there to rectify people. The suffering is done as a means of rectification. It's not done as a means of simply punishment for the sake of punishment. The problem with the modern system of punishing criminals is generally they don't rectify them because they're punishing them. You know, you send them to jail for 5 years for doing something, and then they just get education how to be a better criminal from the sangha, the satsanga in the prison. You understand? From the sangha, you know, criminal sangha. So they just get more education, and they become more effective, efficient criminals when they come out. But the whole idea of restorative justice is to help people understand what pain they cause to others and to understand a little bit of compassion that they would not have want to have that done to them. Of course, that's called the golden rule in Christianity, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And of course, sometimes we take the opposite of the golden rule. Do unto others before they do unto you. That's the modern rule, the Australian motto or American motto. Do unto others before they do unto you. But we say that do unto others, I mean, this is the golden rule. This is the first thing. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. In other words, paradugaduki. That's another expression in Sanskrit, which means to consider others' happiness and distress more important than our own happiness and distress. So, ultimately, that's how we should be rectifying offenders, whether you know they be rapists or whether they be killers or whatever. And that's what we should be hoping for, rather than simply making the person suffer because I suffer. That doesn't solve the problem. Making someone suffer, or the way people bring up children with this punishment, you know, if some child does something wrong, then you make them suffer because of it? It doesn't teach the child better behavior. All it teaches the child is ways and means to avoid getting punished the next time. It makes them more tricky. Or if they submit, it just like destroys their whole sense of personal initiative and, you know, sense of autonomy, and they become like little zombies or robots. So we want to empower people. I mean, that's one problem of an institution like ISKCON, any institution, not just ISKCON, is that we may have too much discipline, and this sort of disempowers people. There's a psychologist who have written about something called learned helplessness. Learned helplessness means that, you know, if either you're disciplined so heavy you're made into a little robot, or people just take care of you 24/7 like a little baby, even though you happen to be 55 years old, then you actually become incapable of fending for yourself. So, anyway, so as far as justice is concerned, we want people to learn in their hearts what they did wrong, how would it affect them, and develop some compassion, and that way they can be rectified. And that's called restorative justice. But in any case, when someone has had something done to them, the main thing is just be compassionate with them. It's not good to say, I feel sorry for you, because that doesn't really help them. That's just about you. And who cares how you feel? We care about the feelings of the person who was attacked. So first there must be a lot of counseling and empathy for someone who's undergone such a difficult... I mean, it's just horrendous. And also that we should take precautions and steps so that it doesn't happen to other people. I mean, there has to be a strict enforcement of the law. I mean, in the Vedic principles, it's almost like Sharia law in that respect. You know, if someone, like for a child abuser, for example, if someone were to commit child abuse in the Vedic system, the Manu Samhita says they would have certain parts of their body cut off and would walk into the sun until they died. You wouldn't have too many child abusers around in that case. So I'm not saying I'm not in favor of Sharia law, but there is strict punishment at the same time. But hopefully punishment to rectify the person, not just to make them suffer. Is that clear or what? Anyway. So it's a difficult question you ask. And it's a difficult question, but as Sadhu said, there's something to be learned. And there's a challenge in everything that happens to us. I mean, let's say you become a car accident, you become paralyzed. There's a challenge there. I mean, ultimately, you have to come to that point. What does Krishna want me to learn from this particular circumstance? But, you know, I don't want to talk about that point because it's not compassionate to really deal with it. When you're talking about a lady being attacked, us men don't really have a good understanding what that means. I mean, that's a complete violation. It's one of the most intense things that can happen in someone's life, if not the most intense thing that can happen. So, other questions about something a little bit lighter? That's fine. You asked the question. The question is good. Someone else have any questions about Krishna consciousness? Yeah.
Maharaj, what happens is, even after due deliberations, if you take a decision which is going to, even though you want the decision to be in favor of your own Krishna consciousness,
yeah,
but then, and if it's a long-term decision, and it's actually hampering your Krishna consciousness, not hampering, but the progress is not as smooth as before, what happens? What?
Give me an example. I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Your practical example.
I'll give my own example.
Okay, your own example.
You know, things were going good, in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And then I thought, if I take up another business, I can use that Lakshmi in Krishna service.
Yeah.
But now I'm finding it that I'm getting more entangled, because, different circumstances. Yeah. I've kept myself a date by which if things don't happen, I'm going to quit.
Mm-hmm.
But still, by that date, I need to find a solution where, should I just tolerate it, or should I take
some action? Well, it's a learning experience. Prabhupada had a similar experience. Prabhupada wanted to develop his pharmaceutical company, so that he'd be able to support Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission with money, and also print books and everything like that. And ultimately, I wouldn't say it wasn't an impediment in Prabhupada's spiritual life, but ultimately it was a failure in one sense. And then Prabhupada took that as a teaching or learning experience. It's a question of how you take it. Prabhupada, at one point he gave up. And he said, this is not what Krishna wants. So many times we do things that really weren't what Krishna wanted. But it's not that it's wrong because we're doing it with the right intention. You understand? It's not that you've done something wrong. Prabhupada's opening up or trying to spread his pharmaceutical business, was right. Because the intention was to please Krishna. And your intention... See, Krishna sees the intention. That's really the point. That even if you make a mistake, and God knows we all make mistakes, right? And we all make wrong decisions in life. I mean, that's life. I mean, I can tell you about all the mistakes I make, but we'll be here for the next 30 years. I mean, I'll tell you about one mistake. I mean, big mistake. I was temple president in a temple in Miami, and I thought it would be good to have, Miami is part of the United States, and I thought it would be good to have a hotel on Miami Beach. Would be a perfect way to spread Krishna consciousness. So we purchased this 100-room hotel on Miami Beach, and I was really excited, and even the GBC, everybody was excited about it. It was probably one of the biggest mistakes I ever made in my life, because just to make the mortgage payments on that thing, I developed ulcers. I mean, all I could drink, that time I was taking milk. All I could take was milk just to soothe my stomach. I couldn't sleep at night. And ultimately, it had to be sold. Of course, it was sold at a profit, which was pretty good. So it wasn't a loss. So the movement did make some money on it. But it was a big mistake. What was the mistake? The mistake was over-endeavor. Like Rupa Goswami says, Achyahara Prayasis Jaja Nimagraha. Collecting too much, or eating too much, or over-endeavoring. I didn't neglect my spiritual life. Obviously, I was always chanting and engaging in Krishna service, but it almost killed me. It almost killed me doing that. So, I learned from it. I learned not to over-endeavor. I learned that he who fails to plan, plans to fail. So before I do anything nowadays, I think 100 times before I do any sort of commitment. And I also have plan B and plan C in place. You understand plan B, plan C? Just like I was told that there's going to be an election in Fiji, and they said, well, the PM has plan B if he doesn't win the election. I won't tell you what that is. But it's plan B, I'm sure. that's just the way things are. So, so I learned a lesson. And so, you learn what Krishna wants and what Krishna doesn't want. And Prabhupada learned it too. I'm not saying he made a mistake, but Prabhupada was trying his best to please Krishna by doing something. And he learned it, so you'll learn too. I mean, every leader is expected to make millions of mistakes. That's part of leadership. However, you only make the same mistake one time. That's how, and you examine any leader. I mean, let's say the most popular, the richest company in the world. What is that? Does anyone know? Starts with an A.
Apple
Computer. And who is the guy? Of course he's dead now. Who is the guy? Steve Jobs. He made so many mistakes. If you just look, I mean, he had this computer called the Lisa. Imagine giving a computer a lady's name. I mean, computers should always be masculine. Or at least named after fruits. like a Mac, Macintosh, you know, Apple. That's named after an apple. So, but, you know, he made so many mistakes. He learned from his mistakes and then developed the most successful company in the world. I mean, his company is bigger than most countries in the world as far as the assets in the company. So that's part of life. And if you don't stick your neck out, yeah, it won't get cut off, that's true. But then you won't accomplish anything. So I advise you to keep sticking your neck out. I'm not advising you to keep with the business, that's up to you. But keep sticking your neck out and taking chances with Krishna like Prabhupada did. I mean, how did Prabhupada develop Krishna consciousness? I mean, he came to America with nothing. With like 2-3 cases full of books and, you know, some rupees he couldn't even change in America. He really stuck his neck out. But of course, be careful sticking your neck out with debt. Because in the Chanaka Pandit says, you know, death, disease, and fire destroy everything. Those are the three things you've got to reread. So you notice that Prabhupada did not go into debt in the beginning to spread Krishna consciousness. It's interesting. You don't find Prabhupada really going into debt. I mean, sometimes the temples, they went into add a little mortgage or something. But in general, Prabhupada did not go into debt. He just preached and depended on Krishna to send money. Sometimes what we do when we're developing a project, we take out a big mortgage or a big loan and we bite off more than we can chew. It's like someone eating more than they can digest. And then it's a complete disaster. I've seen that with many projects. So that should be a first rule, I think, is generally don't go into debt. Unless you have plan B. You know, you can sell your wife or something like that. Or sell your kidneys or something like that. But, I mean, seriously, I think that's the one thing you should have to be real careful of. You know, debt, disease, and of course fire. I mean, fire we usually don't have to deal with. But, you know, disease. You know, so just be careful. Know your limitations. And then make some mistakes. Make some mistakes and then you learn and go on in life. It's not the end of the world. But don't make mistakes that will endanger your family. Or endanger the temple, or endanger the devotees. I mean, you know, they don't think other mistakes we can make. I mean, I could say so many mistakes I've made, but they've all been with the intention of pleasing Krishna, and I've learned from them. I learned that quote about, you know, every great leader makes many mistakes, but he only makes the same mistake once. From a friend of mine named Peter Burwash. Anyone's heard of Peter Burwash?
Yeah. Yeah.
He advises governments, you know, very professional, very nice devotee. He's a devotee, hidden devotee. When I visited him, I had to drive into his garage before I was allowed to get out of the car. Because if people knew he was associated with the Krishna Conscious Movement, he probably wouldn't be able to advise too many presidents or anything like that. But he helps with our school at Sandapani Muni School in Vrindavan. He's given, you know, major contributions. So he gives these seminars and that's what he said, and it's true. And you find with, you know, like with Prabhupada tried so many things. He had Jhansi. He had his preaching program in Jhansi, and it was taken away to make a ladies' bhavan by Governor Munshi and Governor Munshi's wife, and he had to leave that. Prabhupada tried to work with his godbrothers, didn't work. Prabhupada, it's interesting, Prabhupada even had, in the beginning days, when Prabhupada first came to America, Prabhupada had a commitment in India to pay for a temple in New York, to buy a temple in New York. But his godbrothers wouldn't facilitate the currency exchange, because you needed government permission to do that. So you know, Prabhupada approached many different people, trying different things, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. And that's, you know, that's how we should do. I mean, a lot of things Prabhupada did. He was actually experimenting. You know, what would work, what wouldn't work. I mean, like our Gurukula in Dallas, Texas. You know, somehow it didn't work, but it was an intention to spread Krishna consciousness over the time of our children.
Prabhupada, of course, Rockefeller many times.
Yeah, of course.
He is famous, you know. He was asked, how come you're so successful? He says, I jump at every opportunity.
Yeah,
he says, I keep on jumping.
Yeah, Prabhupada the same thing. He jumped at every opportunity. And some things worked out and some things didn't. Just don't go into debt, that's my advice. Because then things spiral out of control. And it's so much anxiety when you're in debt. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, some of you may have experienced that, being in debt, but it's so much anxiety. It's incredible.
We have a saying, you just spread your legs till your child is there.
Yeah, but not further. Yeah. Not further, because it's debt. I mean, you're just making the banks rich, basically. So, yeah.
I have a question here. How do you, in your life, assess the difference between over endeavor and self enthusiasm?
There's several ways. One is, before I do anything, I think about it like 100 times. And you talk to other people. You know, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you plan things out on paper, you know. Especially when they're dealing with financial things. You got to be really careful with financial things. You know, just planning it out, thinking about it, looking at the pros. What do they say? PMI. You do a PMI. You know what a PMI is?
Plus, minus,
interesting points. Like we do with the GBC, we do these PMIs in every proposal. So what's the plus, minus, and the interesting points? And then you think, are there any alternatives to accomplish the same thing? It spends a lot of time thinking about anything serious before you do anything. Very important. Especially if you're going to do anything that has negative repercussions, you should think millions of times. There's that story in the Mahabharata about this young man who always would think like 1,000 times before acting. So one time, his father, they were a Brahmin family, so his father got really angry at his mother, and he said to the son, kill your mother. And so the father went for a business trip. He was away for a few days. So the son was just contemplating the whole time, you know, looking at a knife. Should I kill her? Should I not kill her? Should I kill her? Should I not kill her? So the father comes back, and he finds the son getting ready to kill the mother after 3 or 4 days. And then he says, stop! You know, he holds the son. And then he says, thank God you take a long time to make a decision. I was always getting angry with you before, but now I'm really thankful. So, don't make a decision on the spur of the moment because of emotions. Yeah, a lot of things look good. And don't send any emails out if you're very emotional. Because you can't recall an email. It doesn't work. I tried it. Several times I sent emails out, you know, just like you get really angry at someone, and you just want to just like say, you, so-and-so, or, you know, or whatever it is, and you push the send button, you get so much satisfaction. And then 2 hours later, you say, oh my God. So then what happens several times is that we have this server, the Pam Ho server in this one. So I just, you know, I practically contacted the SysOp. Is there any way to withdraw an email if the person hasn't picked up? Fortunately, I did find a way. Then he said, you enter this command, that command, erase this, erase that. And somehow or other got erased. Actually, the reason that I wanted to erase it, I didn't notice one of the CCs on the email. You know, sometimes you send an email and you're so angry that it's in response to something that had, you know what a CC is? That it's going to be sent to someone who you criticize. And you know, you're so angry you don't notice it has a list of 10 CCs on it. And then I just said, oh my God, if that person finds out what I said about him, I'm finished. So anyway, before doing anything in an emotional state, you think a million times. Before saying anything. I mean, let's say, you know, there's a husband and wife, and if you're going to say something painful to someone else, don't. Just wait like 2 hours. Because, you know, a word said to someone that's painful can't be withdrawn. It's like a knife in the heart. And the person remembers it their whole lives. You know, I had one... there was one wife who said to the husband, you know, just out of a fit of anger, I never loved you. I always hated you from the day we met. And so, I mean, she later wanted to withdraw it, but... No, it didn't work. You know, the husband would always remember that. So you have to be very careful. Think several times before you say anything or do anything. All right? Careful. Any other questions or comments? Shabbat, that's good. Okay. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.